Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org. Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
All right, Thursday at 1 o'clock, and you have tuned into the Heritage Radio Network. You're listening to The Farm Report, and I am your host, Erin Fairbanks. We are coming to you live from the back of Roberta's in beautiful Bushwick, Brooklyn, and today we are on the line with John and Dorothy Priske of Fountain Prairie Inn and Farms. Welcome to the show, guys.
Well, thanks, Erin.
Thank you, Erin.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's lovely to have you on. So I want to jump right in because we have a ton of stuff to cover. I was hoping you could give us a little bit of a picture of Fountain Prairie. It's kind of an interesting farm and inn operation.
Yes, it is. So Fountain Prairie Farms is named after the township we live in here in Columbia County and near Madison, Wisconsin. Every section in our township has water and would have been a tall grass prairie, so hence the name Fountain Prairie.
So not only do we have a grass-based farm, we also turned our 1900s-built Queen Anne Victorian house into a bed and breakfast. So that's the inn part of the Inn and Farms.
Excellent.
And as along with restoring a tall grass prairie and wetland, we went from conventional farming to a totally grass-based farming system, using rotational grazing, and the animal of choice is the Scottish Highland cattle. We have one of the largest herds in the entire Midwest of Scottish Highland cattle.
And if you're not familiar with Scottish Highland cattle, they're really, really quite stunning to see. They all have really beautiful curving horns and shaggy coats, really shaggy coats in the winter. They slim down a little bit in the summer, but they're a very, very distinctive look about them.
Awesome. And I know if people want to get a peek at the inn or some of the animals, they can find you at www.fountainprairie.com. So the farm is on about 200 acres, and then 60 of those have been restored to like a tall grass prairie and wetland. And you guys, I mean, from the website, it said you're raising about 300 head of cattle. Is that right?
Well, we actually hit about 550 head about a year and a half ago. And now we're down to around 420, 440 head. We also rent another 250 acres in addition to ours. We're also we're managing the restored prairie that's been in for 13 years with the cattle now. So that's pretty interesting, having warm season grasses and all the forbs to work with. The cattle really enjoy being up in the prairie.
All the borbs. What is that?
Flowers.
Ah, okay. And the cattle like being in that because it's extra tasty or it's cooler? Or, I mean, what do you think it is that is the attraction?
I think a whole different complex of flavors and smells and tastes from the warm season grasses, from the cool season grasses, what we normally use here in Wisconsin. So it just gives them they just get excited because they're up, this is what this land used to be like, you know, hundreds of years ago before we broke it all and grew corn and soybeans.
And it is a little bit higher in elevation, so I think they may be a bit more comfortable because they can catch a little bit of a prevailing breeze.
Okay. Well, it sounds like a lovely place to hang out regardless. Now,
yeah. Well, it's one of our favorite spots on the farm. We like to go up there and just look at the view.
And so you guys have been selling at the Dane County Farmers Market. That's the wonderful market in downtown Madison, right around the Capitol, since 1987. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
We started out with asparagus on my brother's farm, and then we got a little bit too far off into the industrial model of agriculture, and we then had this epiphany and went totally grass-based and got rid of all the heavy metal and just kept enough equipment to do the rotational grazing.
So we've been selling our Highland beef at the farmer's market for about the last 10 or 11 years.
Okay. And how did you guys get into farming? Do you have a farming background?
Yes, we do. I grew up on a small dairy farm about 45 miles northeast of Madison, and John grew up not too far from Madison, and I don't know which direction because I'm not good with that.
But mostly, I grew up on a subsistence farm where most of the food was raised to feed the family. There was 9 in our family, and the extra then we would sell off. And I started direct marketing, actually, when I was in the 7th grade. That's how I could afford to buy clothes for school. So I've had a long, long history of direct marketing.
Wow. So
The Dane County Farmers Market is a wonderful market. If you ever get a chance, come to Madison. It's been one of the top, it's been voted now the top 17 in the world, one of the best in the United States. We have over 20,000 people go around the square on a normal Saturday morning.
Yeah, no, I've been. It's been a couple of years, but it definitely is both visually striking, and then the array and the energy there is really intense. I mean, being in New York now, where I think we also have a really great market system, it's nice to kind of see that energy in different spots around the country as you get to travel around and check things out. Now, the piece of property that you guys are farming on now, was that in the family, or did you purchase that together, or how did you find your current location?
Well, we purchased the farm in 1986, and it was not a family farm. We bought it from a very optimistic gentleman. He was 92 years old when we bought the farm, and he wrote a 20-year land contract for us. So he planned on being around for quite a long time.
So when you say land contract, did that mean you guys didn't buy the farm outright? You were leasing it, or what exactly?
Well, we actually made a huge down payment, and then we just paid him the balance of principal and interest, as opposed to a bank. He held the mortgage.
Okay.
So if we didn't make our payments, he would get the farm back. And I think deep down he expected us that we would never make it farming, and at least that's what he told the neighbors, that he would get the farm back plus our down payment, which would be a good way to make money, I guess, if you're 92 years old.
Well, I mean, that is one of the things we're going to talk about in the second half of the show is farmers and retirement plans, because it is a... it is one of those conversations that I think, in my experience, people working in agriculture push off and push off and push off. But before we talk more into that, when you got onto the farm, you said you were selling asparagus. Now, I believe asparagus is a crop that takes a few years to cultivate. So was there an existing kind of asparagus plot that you were harvesting from, or how did that?
No. We'll take it one step back. Like a normal farmer, we can never just answer your question. When we were young and we got married 40 years ago this year, I was already working on the railroad to make money to go farming. So Dorothy and I spent a total of 12 years out west in Montana, Idaho, and Washington. And at that time, Washington was putting in a lot of asparagus, and they were following the lead of California. And I thought, well, why wouldn't that work in Wisconsin? It's one of my favorite vegetables. So we did all of our research in the state of Washington, and then we moved back to my brother's farm, and we brought all of the knowledge and all of the roots from Washington, and we put in 16 acres, which is a big, big patch. And then we increased that to 25 acres. So we probably picked, at one day, I remember 2,000 pounds of asparagus. It was quite a project, but... You know, like Dorothy says, anything worth doing is worth overdoing. So
that seems to be the unofficial farm model, but it's not what Dorothy says, it's what John does.
Okay. I'm sure the truth lies somewhere in between, as it usually does. So you were with your multitude of asparagus, and you said that you kind of had this realization that, you know, this wasn't really the system you wanted to be working in. And what was it about that wasn't working for you?
Well, I think we need to clarify a little bit. The asparagus was working. The part that wasn't working, Aaron, is when we strayed too far into industrial agriculture.
When we bought the Fall River Farm in 86, it was one huge cornfield. Everything here had been corn for about 30 years. So naturally, in order to make our payments, we were under a lot of pressure, so we put in corn, and then later on we could rotate and we did some soybeans. But that's the part where we got carried away. The reason we actually bought the farm was it had high organic matter soil, and we wanted to raise broccoli and cauliflower, and we were going to call the farm ABCs of Farming, asparagus, broccoli, and cauliflower. But we just simply couldn't compete with California on broccoli and cauliflower here in the Midwest. They could ship it in cheaper than we could actually grow it, so we had to discontinue that. And that's when I thought, well, we were up to about 1,000 acres of either corn, soybeans, or custom work that we did. And that's where we got carried away. We did the asparagus every spring for 6 weeks, worked really hard. And then the rest of the year we used to raise about 900 hogs a year too.
Wow. So you guys have really traveled kind of the gamut of different types of farming production.
Well, yeah. And then I think it was in the late 90s, we had our big epiphany and realized this wasn't working for us anymore.
So, well, the reason was a couple of our dogs, two of our dogs died of cancer, and it always seemed to coincide like they were the canary in the mine shaft. They'd go out and, you know, walk in the fields after they were sprayed probably and lick their feet. And it was just like kind of shocking, like, you know, did we do this? Is it our fault? Our water, we had some nitrates in it, and we started thinking about what could we do to make changes? We liked the asparagus because it was more of a permaculture thing. Mm-hmm. You plant it once, and there you go. And the other part of it was economics. See, we had a pretty huge farm with a huge debt, and we had to do whatever we had to do to pay that mortgage off. And like you said, we'll talk a little bit more about that later, but sometimes you're forced to do something you're not totally liking. But at one point, we just said, that's it. We're going to change. And one of the things that we came across was an essay by Aldo Leopold. And Aldo Leopold, as you know, is our grandfather of ecology, and he's right here at the University of Wisconsin. And he wrote the Sand County Almanac the year I was born, I think in 49. And he had an essay called The Farmer is a Conservationist. And I've never read anything in my life that made so much sense. Like, why not? We are farmers. We should take care of the land.
Excellent.
And so since that time, we've kind of lived by example. We've just stuck to our convictions. And having the grass, having the bobolinks come back and the meadowlarks, there's so much wildlife that happens when you have all the biodiversity of a grass-based farm.
And how about the Highland cattle? I mean, how did you guys stumble upon them as kind of the right fit in the beef world for you?
Stumble is a good word. Dorothy, go ahead.
Well, we like to say that they found us about the same time that we were, you know, exploring turning our farm into to grass. Our extension agent told us about a study done in southwestern Wisconsin in conjunction with our Department of Natural Resources and the University of Wisconsin Extension, and they had used Highland cattle to help restore an oak savanna. And we found that pretty interesting because we have a creek running through our farm, and, you know, we have some scrubby trees growing up along the banks, and we thought, well, you know, Highland cattle with their tougher tongue and throat, they could help us clean up that area. So I knew someone who had a few animals, and we went to look at them, and we thought, hey, yeah, why not? And we bought our first 12, and it just kept multiplying from there.
When we bought our second herd that had a bull, we knew we would need a bull, and that had some calves. And it was when we ate the first steer, had it butchered, it was like, oh, my God. This is the best beef I've ever had in my life. And it turns out that we get that comment a lot. The Highland is slow to mature, so it ends up more like an Argentina beef. It's got quite a bit of physiological age to it. It's 3 years old when we butcher them, and then we age them for 21 days. So that's another process that not too many people do in the modern industrial method. And so it just intensifies that beef flavor. And, the Highlands, we just fell in love with them. I mean, you watch them in the morning when the mist with their horns, it's beautiful.
It is.
A lot of people come and just take photos of the
just
cattle.
Just to take a picture. Yeah, no, they're a beautiful animal. So I know that your beef is available, for those in the region. They can find you at the farmer's market, or there's a number of restaurants in the Madison area that serve your beef. And then you do sell some cuts through Heritage Foods USA as well. Is that correct?
We do. We sell our ground beef through Heritage Food. Comes in 1-pound packages, and I think we've been working with them for at least 6, maybe 7 years.
Nice. So,
and we'd love to get more beef moving through Heritage Food, because they've done such a great job of promoting heritage breeds and promoting farmers that raise those breeds. And their belief is our belief that in order to save animals, you really need to eat them, which means you have to have some economic value there. And we wouldn't be up to this many head as we do today if it wasn't for the fact that people support us raising a heritage breed.
Wow, that's awesome. So we are going to move to a short break, and then when we come back, we will tuck into that often pushed off conversation about retirement. So stay tuned.
All right.
The following is a message from HeritageFoodsUSA.com. Heritage Foods USA promotes genetic diversity, small family farms, and a fully traceable food supply. Committed to making wholesome, delicious, and sustainably produced heritage foods available to all Americans. Heritage Foods USA purchases 200 heritage pigs a week, each and every week, from a network of about 25 independent farms. In addition to pork, they also process about 7,500 heritage turkeys each November, as well as small amounts of other foods like heritage lamb, beef, and chicken. Learn more and order today at heritagefoodsusa.com.
We are back. You are listening to the Farm Report on the Heritage Radio Network. I am your host, Erin Fairbanks, and we are on the line with John and Dorothy Priskay. We're talking Highland cattle before the break, and now we're going to tuck into a little bit of retirement conversation. So I did a little bit of research before the show, kind of taking a look at some U.S. ag census numbers from the most recent ag census data available, which is from 2007. I was surprised to see that Wisconsin is actually one of the five states in the nation that has the youngest average age of principal operators for farmers, and they're kind of bucking the trend. I mean, definitely the fastest growing segment of farmers in the U.S. is, I believe, 60 plus, and this conversation around farm transition is really dovetailing with this emergence of new interest in farming and young people looking to kind of enter this world of making a living in agriculture. So I was hoping you guys could talk a little bit about your retirement plan and kind of how you've come to decisions around that and where it's at today.
Well, we are in that 60 plus category, so it's a topic that has been on our list of things to talk about for the last year or so, and we think that we have several different options to offer a younger farmer who's thinking about doing similar to what we're doing right now, because we've established a really nice beef business, and I'll let John explain a little bit more about some of the creative ways that we could help a younger farmer start farming and help us ease out a little bit.
Well, one of the things, Aaron, that you have to realize that we're Dorothy and I are a little bit different than normal, and you could laugh at that, I guess.
I was trying to be polite.
We don't have any children to pass the farm on to. We don't have no relatives that are interested in farming. And here we built up this beautiful business, a turnkey operation, and you think, what are we going to do? We can't keep doing this all of our life. We have to figure out how do we exit out of this. And about 5 years ago, we got the idea of having an incubator farm. And so what we've been doing is we offer up about an acre of land for vegetable production or even for chickens on a small scale. And we put up a hoop house, and we dug in a water line and a power line so that this would be a place where young people could come and try their hand at farming. So we have had a young lady raise some rabbits and chickens, and a couple of young men did CSAs and produced vegetables for one particular restaurant. And this year we have two young fellows that were just graduated from the university in Madison, and they want a farm, and they're a part of Slow Food. The university has their own Slow Food group, so some of the food they're producing from our acre of land will be processed and used in the they have a lunch every week and then a dinner every night, one night a week.
Monday nights, yeah.
And so some of the food raised here will go back and feed the kids at the students at the university. So we're really excited about that. And the reason we did the incubator was to allow people a chance. We call it plant a farmer and see what happens. If they like it, then they can move on. And last year's group, they ended up going out to Oregon to work on a farm. So it gives them a chance to just see if this is what they want to do with their life. We like it because it adds diversity to our farm. Being a beef farm is not a complete system. You need to be able to grow the rest of the food, the vegetables. So this gives us a chance to use some of our winter compost and turn it into good manure for fertilizer for the garden. And our farm is all certified organic, even though our beef isn't, but our farm, we've certified that organic. And one of the other things Dorothy and I did that we thought was very, very important was to protect this farm, its 279 acres, from development, because that is a thing that's going on in Wisconsin and probably all over the country. Homes are moving out to the country and taking up good farmland. So just on July 3rd, we just put an easement on our farm, so it'll always be protected for farmland.
Wow, congratulations.
And we feel really excited about that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Who did you work with to put the easement in place?
Well, we worked with the Natural Heritage Land Trust. They will be holding the easement, and then the funding came from the Wisconsin Department of Ag and also the USDA.
Excellent. And how was that process of putting the easement in for you? I mean, how long did it take from kind of the decision to do that until the easement was put in place? And what was that process kind of like for you?
Well, go ahead.
It took about 4 years total to complete the process. And the last year and a half has been particularly stressful and emotional, a lot of ups and downs, and it had to do a lot with the political climate in Wisconsin. The program funding was eliminated from the budget and then came back in the budget, and it was a new program, and they had to write guidelines, and it took a long time.
Yeah, that doesn't sound dissimilar to the back and forth we've had here in New York State. I know we at the radio station have been host to American Farmland Trust a few times on a couple of different shows talking about the work they do here in New York State, but they are a national farm preservation and conservation organization. And this topic of kind of how land easements are funded in that process is something that we'll be looking to discuss more on the program. Now that the land is in easement, what does that mean for your future as far as selling the land or selling the business? I mean, often I feel like when you talk with farmers in your age range about what their retirement plan is, they say, well, my plan is to die.
Well, you're absolutely right, Aaron. A lot of farmers don't have plans to retire, and from our experience working with a couple of local farmers, they don't want to give up control of what they have. They think they will last forever, and they still want to make those decisions. And a young farmer comes in, has his own ideas, and, you know, it's okay for the retiring farmer to not necessarily mentor, but maybe to coach on some things, or to be asked, because he does have a lot of knowledge of the land. But you can't handcuff the new people coming in, because they might have ideas that we've never even considered. There's markets that might need to be explored, little niche markets. There's a lot of things can happen. Go ahead.
Well, one thing that we've been talking about is, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we do have a viable business. We could sell the business but retain ownership of the farmland and rent that to the new business owner. That would be a win-win situation, really, because assuming the person coming in is younger, might not have the financial wherewithal to buy the business and the farm, this would get them in at a lower level monetarily, but it would also provide us with income from the rent on the land. So we think that's a very viable option to explore.
And that's where I was going with these farmers we've worked with. Most of farmers' wealth is tied up in the land. We're always rich on paper, but cash poor. So if you rented out your land, that would be like interest on your investment. So we would be able to still have something that's real and be able to have enough money to live on after we're retired out.
So are you actively looking for someone to come and purchase the business?
Definitely. We're not sure how we're going to go about it at this point. We've had a neighbor couple that have expressed interest. We've had guests that have stayed here on the farm, and they've liked what we've done. And I might add that, you know, we were recognized twice last year. We did win the Wisconsin Conservation Farmer of the Year Award through our Land and Water Conservation Department, and that was a huge honor to be recognized by them. And we also won a Environmental Restoration Award, a Leopold Award, through the Friends of the Arboretum at the university. And that was just two things that happened that gave us a lot of recognition, and people have seen that. And the main restaurant that we've worked with for 10 years, Lake 12 Restaurant out of Madison, Tori Miller just won the Best Chef in the Midwest.
Yeah, congratulations to them. I know that's like a very famous and longstanding and also an interesting transition story there, as Tori, I believe, was working under Odessa Piper for several years as a sous chef, and then she made the leap and sold him the business.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, stayed on in a mentorship capacity and probably, you know, remains, you know, in that role, I would guess. So what would you say are some of the most important characteristics that you're looking for in someone to come and take over some of the operation on your farm and things that you're looking for in a potential partner looking forward?
Sometimes I think that it might not be just one person. You know, Dorothy and I have sacrificed an awful lot to build this business. Maybe it would have been easier if we'd have started with nothing as opposed to having invested in the industrial model of agriculture and then having to divest that and then pursue our goal. Kind of we had to step back and then go forward again. That somebody coming in now would have a total leg up and be able to shot forward off from what we've built. I think what we've done, we have a very good example of a good farmer's approach to, say, land stewardship and food production, but I don't think we've even scratched the surface of what could be accomplished.
also, I think what a partner or a new owner would have to be is a good marketer, and or work with someone who is also a good producer, because they're really two different functions, but they happen to come into play in this particular kind of business.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think your personal story is really reflective of farming as a profession, in that you're constantly engaging with the land and with your production and with your cycles and market cycles. And there is this balance between meeting the very real needs of, you know, paying your mortgage and keeping your bellies full, in addition to being a steward of the land and responding to market demands. I mean, there's definitely something to be said for having a multitude of skill sets and a diversity within the background. So thank you guys both so much for joining us on the show today. We'll definitely recommend to the listeners, if they want to check you out, that website again is www.fountainprairie.com. You have a lovely inn right there on the property, so people can actually come and, you know, make some introductions and stay on the farm. And you will be looking for new kind of trial farmers again for the next growing season, or how would that process work if people are interested in you know, playing around on an acre out at Fountain Prairie?
Well, we've never had a problem finding people, because we're at the market every Saturday, and we are so connected with Slow Food, and we just have a very good connection with the young people in town. So we've never actually had to promote how to find young farmers to come in, but I think there's a lot more opportunities that could be initiated besides just the 1 acre.
Absolutely. Great. Well, John and Dorothy, thank you so much for being on the show
today.
Thank
you very much,
Erin. It's our pleasure, Erin.
Okay, let's definitely stay in touch. Also, big thank you to Joe for engineering today's show. You can always find archived episodes of The Farm Report on heritageradionetwork.org and on iTunes as a podcast. Remember, we're live every Thursday at 1 p.m. And if you have any questions for the show, you can email us at info@heritageradionetwork.org. See you next week, and thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our programs archived on our website or by searching iTunes for Heritage Radio Network. You can find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter @heritage_radio. You can email us at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website. Thanks for listening.